Hey there, my little Typhiliacs. This is your king and god, Tyler. Since my last episode, I wanted to clarify something. You may have heard me mention the name Ashborough once or twice, and you may be a little confused. Well, the news of the lost colony was widely reported back home. By the time you receive this transmission, the story will be almost a decade old. Some of you may require a refresher on the facts. In any case, it still feels somewhat inadequate of me, as a journalist, to not provide you with some kind of background. It was, after all, possibly the most significant occurrence to date in the short history of mankind's colonization of Kailus. I'll tell you as much as I can, as much as I know myself. But as you may remember, like the disappearance of poor Annabelle, it's mostly questions, and not many answers. So, where to begin? With Oasis, I suppose. It was Oasis that established their first colony here on Kailus. What was that, over 10 years ago? It was named Ashborough, and was like what we have here now. Fledgling, crude, wet. But it wasn't here. Not far from here, but further inland, in the forests. The first wave, the establishing group of colonists, was about 50 people. It was a small group, much smaller than the establishing team for the Nauk. They landed with success and set about building their first structures and settlements. They even managed to transmit several messages back home. That was within the first few months, maybe. Well, we're not certain exactly how long they were there, but we do know they stopped uploading to the Comlink satellite after 3 months. By the time the second wave of colonists arrived 6 months later, every single one of the original 50 were gone. They were wiped out. No one really knows by what. When the second wave got off the shuttle, they found nothing but empty structures and a half-finished perimeter wall, kinda like ours. There were no bodies, no signs of violence, no messages, nothing. It was completely deserted. Again, no one really knows, but there are plenty of theories. Everything from otherworldly predators to curses or disease. I know what you're thinking. Our girl Annabelle's disappearance is starting to sound similar, huh? Anyway, the second wave got on as best they could. They couldn't simply turn around and begin another 4-year journey back home. So, they picked up where the others had left off. They repurposed the existing shelters and began finishing the fence. That's when the storm set in. No one is certain exactly how bad it was. All our info is based on limited distress calls we received during the time, but evidently it was bad enough that it diminished their numbers to a small handful. Since the storms had destroyed what little crops there were, those that remained began to starve. They continued to issue distress calls, but by the time these were received back on Earth, it was years later. Due to funding cuts, the other supply shuttles had been delayed. Predictably, the messages abruptly ceased. The Ashborough colonization was deemed a disaster. The Oasis board was furious, and anxious to move forward as quickly as possible. Almost immediately, they relaunched a new colonization plan, fast-tracking 4 new shuttle waves and announcing a new colony location on Kailus. It would be better equipped with more people and advanced equipment. At first, they touted the new program as a kind of rescue mission, but before long, people were once again talking about possibilities for wealth and furthering mankind's place in the universe. All that shit. They wanted to put Ashborough behind them. When the first Nauk shuttle wave arrived 8 months ago, a team was sent to Ashborough to discover what was left. They didn't find much. A few shriveled corpses were all that was left of the first colony. What couldn't be salvaged quickly was left there in the woods to rot and rust. I don't think anyone's been back there since. And now you know. Spooky stuff, right? Well, kids, enjoy that easy head to sleep tonight. I'm about to do the same, but first, like, subscribe, and stay safe. Ty out.
Log entry 4TAC 537 Alpha. Caldwell, Liam. I can't sleep. The supply shuttle is now 2 days late, and I've begun to worry. As I said before, delays are expected, but Oasis has always been diligent with the schedule. Course correction alone wouldn't delay the arrival more than 19 hours. To compound this, there's the terrible news I received from Dr. Wood and Mr. Foster. The red fungus, what Dr. Wood calls the Crimson Frost, appears to be more dangerous than we first suspected. Not only is it hostile to plant life, but to animals as well. We've seen no ill effects within our walls yet, but it grows quickly. We'll need to work harder to ensure it doesn't take hold within the colony. Crop infection would be a disaster. The inability to grow our own food, combined with the delay in shuttle resupply, means starvation is a legitimate concern. And then there's the equipment. The discovery by Mr. Foster that the operating system code for the drones and rovers has been sabotaged. I'm still not sure what to make of this. Oasis does have competitive corporations, but none of them would be so bold as to actively sabotage an off-world colony. It wouldn't only be an attack on Oasis, but on all of mankind's future. What could be accomplished by this? It's all questions and no answers. I've told no one else about the sabotage or the fungi. There's enough fear among us already. I know I can trust Dr. Wood to keep this quiet, and I hope I can trust Mr. Foster as well. However, all of this has forced my hand. We can no longer wait for help. I'm going to authorize a full expedition tomorrow. The purpose, at least what I plan on informing the others, will be to explore the surrounding area and search for any more signs of Annabelle. The secondary purpose, and important one, will be to scout a location where the Crimson Frost fungus does not grow. May be necessary to move our colony. I'm sure Whitlock will be pleased.
Mr. Park. Well, that cautious fool Caldwell has finally agreed to send out a second expedition, as I had suggested days ago. He didn't authorize any surveying, however, and refused to let me join in the company. His reasoning is that it would be specifically a rescue and reconnaissance mission, and it was unnecessary to risk any unqualified personnel. I believe what he's really trying to say is that he thinks me useless and doesn't trust me not to persuade the group toward more lucrative functions. He may be correct, but I still resent him for it. Still, I've taken some consolation in the fact that he's conceded to my requests and now understands the need to do something. In this small victory, it's as though his power has weakened. I've seen men in his position before. Stressed. Not ready for the responsibility and dissent that swarms around them. They always crack. Caldwell will too. I'll take some solace in that. And credit for it. It's the best I can hope for at this point, Mr. Park. I must stay here and wait. It unnerves me, but it also gives me time to observe. This afternoon, in fact, as I was taking a walk around the colony, I noticed something quite remarkable. The small group of religious zealots has grown in size. When I arrived, there'd only been a dozen or more, but now as I walk around, I see many more of the colonists in those terrible black robes. I suspect it's the fear that stoked their religious fire. The missing girl, these mysterious woods, talk of ghosts and curses. It's got many of these simple-minded chumps spooked. In the absence of true safety and security, they've at least found the illusion of it. Just now, when I was returning to my tent, I saw a large crowd of laborers gathered around Amos Moreau. I could easily see how this man could hold sway over the minds of lesser beings. He was talking to this crowd, evangelizing to them about his gospel. I won't bother sharing the details of what he said, but I was struck by how much sway he had over his listeners. These people were hanging on his every word. They were captivated. He has a kind of charisma that's rare. It's no wonder he leads a religion. Men with that kind of draw are either messiahs or serial killers. Power recognizes power, Mr. Park. No matter what strange form it may come in. I've decided I must speak with Mr. Moreau. We will either become valuable partners or bitter enemies.
Science log, entry D7, Dr. Lauren Wood. After the discovery of the animal carcass yesterday morning, I ran the necessary tests on the samples I had taken. The results confirmed my fears. The fungus had attached itself to living cells and corrupted the cell blueprint. It was unclear why the fungus alters these cells, but once it does, it breaks them down into food. What was extraordinary was how quickly it does this. Within 17 hours, the carcass was almost entirely consumed. Skin, muscles, and bones. No fungi on Earth worked that fast. In short, the Crimson Frost fungus was dangerous, and any living thing could be susceptible. That included not only the colonists, but our crops as well. When I told Caldwell, he was understandably disturbed. He told me he was going to authorize a search expedition, and while he wanted me along, my purpose was not going to be looking for Annabelle. I was to scout out a possible location where we could move the colony if needed. A place with safer ground for crop growth. We packed quickly and set out this morning. I'll admit I was selfishly interested in seeing more of Kailus, especially the forest. At first, I wondered how realistic Caldwell's objective was. This climate appears to be perfect for this fungal growth, and it's unlikely we'll find much different in only a few days' walk on foot. But there have already been subtle changes. There was almost no flowering on any of the vegetation surrounding the colony. But within the forest, there are new species of trees abundant with multiple coloured blossoms. The colours were so vivid they appeared fake. Despite the changes in plant life, the Crimson Frost fungus is still visible. If you look closely, you can spot its red shade between the leaves of ferns and in the crevices of tree bark. I haven't told the others about my mission. Caldwell advised me not to. Everyone thinks we're still on a reconnaissance and rescue mission for Gerard's wife. I'm not sure what difference it would make. There's a nervous tension among us already.
Hey, little brother. I think maybe Cash has it in for me. As soon as I got the hookup in the lab, I get dragged back out into these woods. And this time, we're going further. This time, we're going all the way to Ashboro. We struck out this morning, following a similar route as last time, heading northwest to Delta Point. From there, we'll continue north all the way to the Lost Colony. We're not going to return on the same route. There's a river that runs by Ashboro, and we're going to follow this southwest. The limited maps and surveillance we have suggest this same waterway empties into the ocean a few dozen kilometers north of the Knock. Basically, we're going to make a loop. All in all, Cash estimates it will take us 5 days. There's a few more of us this time. Aside from Cash, there's Lauren, Gerard Gordon, that's Annabelle's husband, John Cordy, and Max Gentry, both of whom I know from the working party, and finally, Ed Robbie, who I recognize from the mess hall. There's also a half dozen of Cash's security forces. I don't know any of them well enough yet, but I'm sure glad they're here. We made camp not far from where we were only a few days ago, although I'm less anxious tonight as I was then. Cash allowed us a campfire this time. and the extra members of our party provides a stronger sense of safety, even out here. It didn't rain tonight, which is rare, so after a quick meal, we hung around the fire a little longer. Everyone except John and Gerard. John had the second watch and wanted to get some sleep. Gerard volunteered for the first watch. I'd like to think that this was a generous offer, but to be honest, I get the sense he doesn't want to be around us. His loss. Ed had a flask of whiskey he passed around, so people began to loosen up and talk a little bit. At first it was just bits and pieces, you know, where people were from back on Earth and what they did. Then everyone started taking turns explaining why they'd come to the colony in the first place, and why they'd signed up with Oasis. Max, whose real name is Maxine, used to be a cook back home. Like a chef at a restaurant with 2 Michelin stars. She lost her job, though, during the economic fallout, and decided to do something new. Ed had been a car salesman. He'd had what sounds like the perfect life. A wife, 3 kids, a big house. But he had an affair, and his wife divorced him and took everything. He said he'd considered ending it all at one point, but then he found Reverend Moreau and joined the Star Children. Cash's story wasn't surprising. Ex-Marine. He got out of the Corps, was still angry at everything. Needed a new challenge, someplace he could put his skills to use. When it was Lauren's turn, she was hesitant at first. But after the flask made its way around the second time, she began to loosen up. She'd come here with her partner, Amy. They were both estranged from their families. I guess Amy had been an engineer at Oasis. She'd been the one who convinced Lauren to come. But during the flight to Kailus, there had been a malfunction in Amy's hibernation pod, and she had died. After hearing this, we all felt sober again. I took the opportunity to excuse myself. I didn't want to get into my background. I think you know why. What would all these people think if they found out they had the son of the Oasis founder here with them? Would it really matter to them if I told them he disowned me? Would it matter if I told them I hated him? Damn it. Sorry, kid. You know I couldn't make him understand. I wonder if he ever talks about me. I wonder if he regrets the fight as much as I do. I miss you, little bro. Hell, I miss everyone. Even him.
Processing incoming signal. Transmission intercepted. Classification unknown. Sender unknown. Beginning decryption. Decryption incomplete.
Green, blue, yellow, green. 4, 7, 8, 3. Fly Fox to Mother Hen. Project Kasara is a go. Western Wind is a go. Data. Knock progress is halted. Equipment is disabled. Colony unstable and vulnerable. Commencing stage 2. No sign yet of specimen C. Reports of visions. These are unsubstantiated. Colonist has gone missing. Stage 2 commencing. Green, yellow, blue, blue. 11, 11, 9. Blue, yellow, green, 4, 7.
this Elizabeth Devereaux, the writer?
I was a reporter for the Globe, if that's what you mean.
I might have a story for you, if you're interested.
And what would that be about?
Murder.
I adored Mr. Croft. We trusted each other.
His work had the potential to change how we thought about our place in the universe.
Aiden was different. He was exciting. A real alpha man, and that's my type, obviously.
I'd known him since we both were undergrads at Harvard. We didn't exactly run in the same sort of crowd back then.
He said he was worried Aiden's life was in danger. The threats had been made.
It was a mess. There were 8 stab wounds in the back, and the throat was cut. Oh, there was a lot of blood.
I want you to interview the suspects and tell me who's lying.
You were the last person to see him alive.
Other than the murderer, you mean?
Aiden collected Rothko's to hang on his bathroom wall. We didn't exactly run in the same circles.
You think I finally had enough and stabbed him to death? Cut his throat?
I don't want you to contact her again. She called me last night. She was hysterical.
Aiden could be a real bastard, but that doesn't mean I wanted him dead.
At the time, I didn't think much of it, but I noticed one of the steak knives was missing.
It was filled with books and paintings about the occult. Pentagrams and pyramids.
But there were accusations.
No matter what anyone says or thinks, I always respected Aiden Croft.
There was a bad energy. Aiden's death was not the first, nor was it the last.
You're talking about the affair.
You know about that?
There was someone spying on Croft.
I asked you to speak with the guests. It sounds like you're digging up more bodies.
This isn't about finding out who was in the library with the candlestick. There's no way anyone was in the room.
You see, the means and the motives weren't the problem with this case. That night, no one had the opportunity.
From the creator of the Oasis Transmissions comes a new original story, 7 Suspects, an audio fiction whodunit. Follow each episode to unravel who's lying, who's telling the truth, and who murdered Aiden Croft. 7 Suspects. Listen and subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you stream your podcasts.